Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power, and that is exactly what we're going to be having today. We have a very special guest, Dr. Richard Bandler, who has put some marvelous information together on the power of the mind. This is a man who has dedicated himself for well over 40 years to understanding the human thought processing and how we can empower ourselves as individuals. And you have today an opportunity to hear directly from him some points of information that, if nothing else, it should encourage you to go and get his books, because you have the right of choice, and the right of choice is something you always should exercise. Dr. Richard Bandler, I want to welcome you to my show.
Well, it's nice to be here.
You have two books, and I want to mention both their titles, and I know you've written other materials, but these are the ones that I reviewed. Get the Life You Want, The Secrets to Quick and Lasting Life Change with Neuro-Linguistic Programming, and then also The Guide to Transformation. Before we went on air, you said there's two different books, which they are, two very different in context, and you want, with transformation, it's more like a cookbook. And I thought that is a wonderful, wonderful comparison to use there. So let's start off about Get the Life You Want. I'd like to ask you a personal question. What motivated you to start this journey of curiosity and development in working with the mind?
Well, actually, it was quite by accident more than anything else. My original training was in mathematics and in formal logic and information science. And I inadvertently met a woman named Virginia Satir, who is probably one of the best psychotherapists that ever lived. And she took a shine to me, and I went and watched her work. And when I watched her work, it all made perfect sense to me, but yet nobody seemed to understand what she was doing. And so I set up a task of trying to see if I could make it so that it was very learnable, see if I could break it down into little pieces so that people could repeat what she did. And that's really what formal modelers or mathematicians originally did. We tried to get computers to imitate human behavior, and I took it a step further to try to get humans to imitate human behavior and see if I could make it easier. And then inadvertently, I also met Milton Erickson through Gregory Bateson, who is a mathematician. And Milton Erickson was probably one of the greatest hypnotists that ever lived. And he was somebody that nobody could make sense out of, and that I understand, because he was such a good hypnotist, nobody could stay conscious around him. But over the years, I did a lot of modeling, first of what great communicators did, and then ultimately kind of flipped it over and started finding out how people were successful at things and other people couldn't do it, even simple things like spelling. Mm-hmm. How is it one kid can spell and another kid can't spell? And as we began to examine how people did it, not so much intuitively, but what their consciousness was made out of, and it turns out people who are good spellers make very clear pictures of the words in their head and copy them down. And I know when I went to school, they told me to sound everything out, and you can't even spell phonetics phonetically. Mm-hmm. It's just a really bad set of instructions. And then I built a career out of taking cases of people they gave up on, because I found them the most interesting. And so, you know, whether it was a depressive or a schizophrenic or learning disabled kids, what I would do is, instead of studying people who couldn't do things, I would go and find somebody who could do it. I'd go find a really happy person and teach the depressive to do what the happy person did. Mm-hmm. And that required lots of skills over the years. And last summer, what I did is I locked myself up in my house in Ireland, and literally I was in the kitchen, and I was thinking about how I was going to write a book that people could just use to do something, and I realized cookbooks are a really good example of how people share information. So the book, Get the Life You Want, is really broken into three pieces. The first one is, how do you get over things? Bad habits, how do you get over fears, you know, how do you get over phobias, how do you get rid of bad memories? And every single one, I put down an example, and if people just follow the steps, they get very good results. I've been very successful with these kinds of things over the years. The second part is, how do you get through things? How do you get over addictions? How do you get over bad marriages? How do you get over regrets? And the third part is, how do you get around two things, like doing your taxes and having fun and meeting new people? And there's probably close to 40 different procedures, and all of them are things you can do in less than 10 minutes. And if you do the right thing with your brain will give you the right results. If you make pictures of words and you make them big enough you can see them, it's easy to copy them down. If you try to sound them out, well, a lot of words don't look the way they sound.
That's very, very true. You make a statement in your book, when you learn how people think, you can teach them how to change the way they think.
Absolutely. If you don't understand what people are doing inside their mind, it's very hard to alter it. In order to stay frightened of something, you have to manifest the same thoughts. In order to have anxiety, you have to do anxious things inside your head, or you wouldn't have the anxiety. And you need to know which pictures they're making, how big they are, and where they are. That when people have anxiety about things, most of the time the pictures are larger than they would be if they were actually occurring in the real world. And therefore, that allows them to manifest the feelings. Now, most of the time, they're not totally conscious of those pictures,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't mean they can't change the size of them. The thing that's the most malleable of all is your consciousness. Your ability to put pictures on the right or the left, make them bigger or smaller, and make them further away or closer, turn up the volume of voices in your head and turn it down. All of those things are something that everybody can change. And the whole notion in psychology was that if you understood why you had problems, they would sort of magically disappear, that insight produced change. And really, change produces change. If you change the way you think about something, it changes the way you feel, and therefore changes what you do.
You bring a point out in your book that in your observation through the many years that you've been involved with the development of neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, that you had observed in watching people go through things, how their bodies often moved when they were talking, and the way that they were living the experiences, like you used the bigger picture.
Right down to the fact that if people's eyes shift up and to the left, they're recalling images. Their eyes go up and to the right, and they're constructing images. And their eyes go down and to the left, and they're talking to themselves, and their eyes go down and to the right, and they're accessing feelings. There's even an idiom in English that's downright important.
Mm-hmm.
And people go, let's see, and poof, their eyes go up, and they make visual images. To me, it's kind of astonishing that the field of psychology missed things like that, because it's very obvious, you know, but once you realize things. And it's also really important. If somebody's thinking in pictures and you talk to them about their feelings, they're just confused. You have to match people and then lead them into new places.
Milton Erickson, as you said, was so recognized throughout the world for his skill as a hypnotist. You went further than he did, because instead of putting people under the hypnotic therapy as he had structured it, you said it was possible to help people make changes without hypnotizing them. They were totally consciously aware of everything that you were doing. How did you do
that? To a certain degree, as much as we're conscious of most of what goes on, they may not be conscious of the skills I was using, but they didn't have to be in some deep somnambulistic trance.
Mm-hmm.
That the fact that you could put people in trance and get rid of inhibitions or remove fears or get them to control their blood pressure or be able to remember events from the past, and then when you bring them out of trance, they couldn't do those things, simply didn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
It meant their neurology was capable of it. And if your neurology is capable of something in a deep trance, it should be capable of it, period. And, the fact that somebody can be creative in a deep trance and they can't be creative in the waking state, just didn't make sense to me. And so I wanted to find out what people were doing so that they could do it more on purpose, so to speak, or more consciously.
You have a case right in the front of your book about a young woman who was absolutely terrified. She would wake up afraid. She would go to sleep afraid. She was terrorized by her own thinking, and she had never lived in a place where bombs had been exploded. She had not been a victim of a terrorist attack, and she had gone through years and years of therapy, and you said it was quite by accident that she came to you, and she had enrolled in one of your courses where you had something like 500 people there. Tell us a little bit about this gal and how this was resolved.
Well, this is not a one-time thing. This is something that happens all the time. You have to understand that somebody who has these kinds of fears, it's not, you know, even if I had somebody who was in the 7/7 bombings in London, and 2 years later, she was still terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd been to therapy, but of course everybody knew why she was terrified. She was in a bus that blew up. You know, people died on that bus. She didn't happen to be one of them. But every time she walked out of her house, she felt like she was going to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out why she was afraid. But that doesn't mean that you have to understand the fear wasn't in the bus. The fear wasn't in the bomb. The fear was in her brain. She was doing something that produced fear every day. And by getting her to disassociate from that fear, that is to look at herself being afraid, and literally run the memory backwards in her head, then make the bus attach back together and go backwards and get off and walk to her house in reverse. What happens is the neurosynapses, which always go to the next one in signs, literally flatten out. So the fear doesn't work automatically. When you shrink pictures down so that they're smaller than life and you literally see yourself in something where you're afraid, you're not feeling afraid, you're seeing yourself being afraid. And if you mentally do it at a certain speed, what happens is it literally changes the neurosynapses so they don't fire automatically. And the case you're talking about and the case that I'm talking about with the woman in the 7/7 bus, the important thing is, you know, is there was really nothing that fear helped her. I mean, sure, it was terrifying to be in a bus that blew up, but to be afraid every day thereafterwards is just means that you've overlearned something. The neurology of human beings is designed to learn and to learn from our experience, but to learn to be afraid of absolutely everything, anybody with a purse or a backpack, didn't serve this person to live in the future. And so to me, you have to recode your neurology a little bit. And there are loads of people that have gotten over fears. And all I did was find out what they did and started teaching other people to do that.
There are so many young men and women that have post-traumatic stress syndrome that have served in the military. And
not just in the military. There are loads of people that have it in all kinds of situations, from car accidents, from being molested, from being
mm-hmm.
beaten up, from being in a bad relationship where somebody beat you up. Certainly with the military, we started doing things with post-stress syndrome back in the Vietnam War. A lot of guys came back from Vietnam, and they couldn't re-enter society because there were so many things that triggered off all the overwhelming feelings that they had when they were in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the same procedures that I used with the lady on the bus of taking those memories and being able to disconnect them so that they weren't operating in the present. You know, because you spend 2 years running around the jungle with bombs going off. Even though you're not in the jungle anymore, your neurology doesn't necessarily know that. And the minute it starts to get dark, when things were scarier, your neurology starts kicking in the fear to make you more alert. But it doesn't really serve you if, you know, you jump out of your skin every time a car backfires, or if you start flashing back and forth between the present reality and a war zone.
Mm-hmm.
Your neurology has to be able, and there is a mechanism mentally to get over things, to put things in the past. And we all have it inside us. We've all put things in the past. You know, there are things that were important to us when we were 10 years old that we really don't think about anymore now.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we see ourselves in those memories and we push them into the distance. And if we do it quick enough, and then we don't think about it anymore. And this book has mental procedures that people can run through that make bad memories go away. And so they don't bother you anymore.
Your book, Transformation, is very, very significant, and I think so empowering with the material that you've put together. And I'm just going to pull a couple of things out of you. You talk about how we're meta-programmable, and to you, the definition of freedom is being able to use the conscious mind to direct the unconscious activity, and that the unconscious mind is hugely powerful, but it needs direction.
Well, the unconscious processes in human beings don't really have opinions. I think that's kind of a misnomer that Freud brought around, that we had some horny little man inside of us that had motives. And our unconscious processes, our heart beats 2 billion times, and your unconscious neurology doesn't think about it until it stops. And the way in which we learn things so that we can repeat them is a mechanized process. The purpose of the conscious mind is to aim all of this. It's like the difference between a car and the person driving it, that it's the job of the conscious mind to pick directions and to focus it. And where people get into trouble is when their unconscious is going one way and their conscious mind is going another. And typically that's because consciously we're giving mixed messages to our unconscious. When you say to yourself, don't be nervous, the unconscious doesn't process negation, so you start getting nervous. You know, even if you walk up to the door of somebody and look them in the eye and go, now, don't get worried. They'll freak out in a second. Because, you know, when you say don't think of blue, blue is the first thing on your mind. And understanding how to structure your thought patterns so that you can go where you want to go is a lot of what this book is about. That, you know, we have different trance states that we use for different things. And being able to consciously aim yourself so that when you're sleeping and when you're walking, and when you're having fun, you're thinking about having fun instead of dividing your attention. A lot of people, when they're at work, are thinking about being out of work, and when they're at home, they're thinking about work. So their consciousness is mixed up about where they are in time and place, and it confuses their neurology as well as the people around them.
You say there are three steps to making enduring change. One, people must become so sick of having the problem that they decide they really want to change. Two, they have to somehow see their problem from a new perspective or in a new light. And three, new and appealing options must be found or created and pursued.
Well, number one, I want to say that I'm not saying this is the only way to change.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that if I do these things, I can produce change in just about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, understanding that most of the people that come to me have tried everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been through therapy, they've had megavitamin treatments, electric shock treatments, they've been conditioned and analyzed and everything else you can think of. And usually when they come to me, that number one, they're hopeless. But hopeless is really different than fed up. I noticed that when people made changes without therapy or without me or without anybody else, typically what made it a dramatic change is they got to the point of being completely fed up. And it was just like, even though they'd done it a million times, something happened where it was the straw that broke the camel's back. And it meant that once that happened, they just were so fed up that they restructured their thinking. And I don't think we have to wait for that to happen. There are ways of inducing that in ourselves, which can get us to get over things a lot quicker. And that's one of the things that I do with the people I work with.
And in the book Transformation, you have a number of exercises people can use. And I thought I'd just chat for a moment about getting things done. Procrastination is an issue many people have challenges with. They will know they've got a deadline, something has to be done, and then all of a sudden at the last minute they're scrambling. I think of a member of my family when he was in college. He would wait until, you know, 5 minutes before the end of the hour to get something done. And
well, a lot of people motivate themselves by stress.
Mm-hmm.
And so they think, well, I've got 3 whole weeks left to do this. And they go, well, that's plenty of time. And then a week later, they think about it and go, well, I have 2 weeks left. That's plenty of time. And then when it starts getting closer and closer and closer, then, you know, they get more and more stress in their body, and they use that as the machine to drive themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's not really the best way to get yourself motivated. See, not only can you move away from discomfort, you can move towards satisfaction. And one of the lessons that I like people to learn is that, you know, that also these deadlines are arbitrary. You can move them up in your mind and create stress right away and get it done and over with. That, you know, the fact that, you know, that somebody on the outside tells you that this is the date, you still have to go on the inside and tune your neurology up to make the stress happen slowly over 3 weeks rather than in 3 minutes. And neurologically, we're capable of adjusting these things. And we're also capable of making it so that it's not so unpleasant. We can also make it so that it feels good to get things done. And the more we get done, the better it feels. Part of the reason both my books have so many exercises in them is that, to me, the proof is in what people can actually do. When I started out, there were like 40 schools of psychotherapy arguing over who had the right approach, and not one of them could systematically fix anything for anybody. If you know, I would always ask them, I'd go, you know, can you get people over phobias? And they would look at me and say, well, it doesn't work that way. And I don't see how you can argue about whether a theory is right or wrong if it can't get results. That if people come in with a phobia, I can pretty much guarantee they'll walk out without it. And to me, that's the test. Mm-hmm. And if they do the right things in their head, if I give them the right lesson, they can make sure that they're not afraid of whatever it is. And each of these exercises, if people do them thoroughly, they will get results. This has all been tested over and over again.
Mm-hmm. You say you want everyone to know that they have the ability to learn to optimize their brain.
That's right.
And that
you can think about repairing it, or you can just get down and optimize it.
Mm-hmm. And that is very exciting, because I feel that that kind of a positioning is so empowering to anyone, regardless of age. If a parent is dealing with a child that seems to have learning problems, they need to know that the brain can expand, that that child can develop an awareness of learning. There are
Teachers can only teach what they know.
Mm-hmm.
And if, with the fact that a student can't learn from a particular teacher, we start diagnosing the student as being learning disabled.
Right.
That's a big mistake. Right now in England, there's something called the Durham Project. People can even find it on the web. And we went in and did a couple of days of training with teachers, and suddenly the kids, all their scores go up 30%.
Mm-hmm.
We go in and do another couple days, and their scores go up 30% again. Because we're teaching teachers how students actually have to mentally process information. If you don't have the right strategy in your brain to spell, you won't be able to spell.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the right strategy in your brain to add, you won't be able to add. And schools have a tendency to just give you problems, and they don't tell you how to solve them. You know, they may give you the equation and tell you how to write it down, but they don't tell you how a great mathematician does it in his head. And that's typically because the teachers themselves don't know, and they're not taught that in school. They're taught to run an overhead projector and to make lesson plans instead of teaching people the strategies by which information needs to be processed. These years, the last 30 years of computer programming have taught us anything. It's that a machine runs well when it has the rest program in it. If there's something wrong with the program, the information won't go through it. And our brain is no different. If we have a way of processing information that works, we will use it. People, I believe, always make the best choice. And if we teach kids and if we teach adults how to process information in a way that produces positive feelings, to begin with, you know, it's funny. They say these kids with attention deficit disorder, you see them sitting in arcades for hours playing the same machine.
Right.
Now, how could they have attention deficit disorder? It seems to me that, you know, that's a comment on the fact that the schools are just way too boring. And that, you know, the fact that somebody's mind moves faster than the school teacher means that we should speed up the school teachers and speed up what goes on in school. And probably we would have a lot less hyperactive kids. And the idea of giving them Ritalin and drugs to be able to stabilize their thought patterns rather than making it as interesting as a video game is just foolish. If we want our kids to be smarter, we have to go first.
I agree, and your thinking and the material you have in your books is just excellent. You say that every successful person you have ever met has been driven, and they've been driven by curiosity. And I really liked that because that is so true. They're curious. They're very almost childlike in the way that they approach things.
Well, you know, our school systems, not just ours, but it seems like every country, I've traveled the world quite extensively, and it seems like educational processes aren't there to install curiosity and learning. They're there to get you to perform a certain way. They have words like standardized testing. Even the word sounds horrible to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think coming out of school, everybody should know the same thing. We should all know different things so that we can all go out and do different things. There should be a certain level of performance, but that level of performance should be something that we all enjoy. We should all know how to read very soon, and then what we read should be something we choose based on our interest. We should all know how to do mathematics and have numeracy down, but we shouldn't be doing it by the time we're in high school. We should be doing it in the first 5 years of school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the younger we are, the more programmable we are. And it seems like the people that keep learning are the ones that stay young in their spirit. And it seems like a lot of the things in life are designed to hammer that out of people. And that's a real shame, but you don't have to live that way. The more you become curious about things and the more you enjoy learning, the more you do of it. It's like any other good addiction. I mean, there are good addictions and bad addictions. You know, drug addictions don't make you smarter. I know they tried to tell us in the 60s that taking LSD would make us smarter, but I don't think it did.
Mm-hmm.
I think what makes us smarter is being really curious and wanting to know things and reading about them and talking to people and trying things and making sure they work. I mean, I met a lot of intellectuals when I was in college that talked things to death. I used to go to these academic conferences where people talked things to death, but yet they couldn't actually do things. So they had one idea and then they defended it for life rather than testing it and then finding something that's new. Most of the great physicists that I met, they were interested in taking a theory and then making something that worked out of it. And otherwise, it was just an idea and should be put in a closet until it found an application. And, you know, and when you read about people like Einstein, you know, Einstein's theory of the universe was that it was incredibly generous and friendly, and that what we should teach children about the universe is it would provide us anything if we were curious enough to explore it.
Absolutely.
And I believe the best example of that is your mind. It will provide you whatever you want if you explore it enough.
Mm-hmm. And if you're willing to step out of the confines of what might be considered the box in the world, the established, gee, this is what you're supposed to do, and be open and receptive to that part of yourself that loves to learn, that wants
to
explore.
Well, you know, it seems to me, because, you know, over the years, you know, I did a lot of stuff that I probably nobody else would have done. I'm a little bit crazy that way. But down the road, when I give lectures, there's always people coming up to me telling me I must have encountered tremendous resistance to my ideas. And that's absolutely the opposite of the way it was. That the more I discovered things that worked, the more people wanted to know about them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they were psychiatrists, psychologists, school teachers, or anybody else, that the more you have something to offer, the more people want to know about it. But, you know, this thing, I think where people encounter resistance is where they fight over ideas and not things that work.
Well, I have to compliment you, Dr. Bandler, because you have written your material in a way a layperson can read this, they can practice it, they can work with it. Whether someone is concerned about changing habits, if you can change your thinking, then you change your response to life. And it is a process that can be done literally in minutes, and I know that you probably have a website, which I'd love for you to give us your website so that we could go to that if we wanted to explore this more. But your book, Guide to Transformation, and then the other one, Get the Life You Want, I think are just outstanding.
It's Richard Bandler's Guide to Transformations. And the other one is Get the Life You Want.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a website. It's richardbandler.com. Pretty easy to remember. And if people are interested in getting my materials, they can always go to the NLPbookstore.com.
NLPbookstore.com.
And that has tapes and DVDs and books galore.
That's marvelous. Dr. Bandler, I know you've got a busy schedule. I so appreciate your being with me today. I think what you are offering is marvelous, and it gives an opportunity for people to be personally empowered to take charge of their own space and also to expand their awareness and thinking into a whole new modality that otherwise maybe they've never had an opportunity to explore but really are interested in doing so. Thank you for being my guest today.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. We've got some good things to share with you today. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me today, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Here are the telephone numbers to call in to 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. By the way, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. That's it. And then after that, you're welcome to ask me about anything that you like. So it's painless, and it's that simple. Remember, I'm an information resource, and I'm available to you during this part of the programming. So feel free to give me a call. Now, I do want to thank those of you that are sending me emails regarding the contest that we have. We are going to be giving away 3 gift packages from Teresa Tapp. Now, Teresa, as you know, is a wellness expert, and she's been on the show, and we now have this opportunity to have this giveaway. It's $100 plus in value. It's her skin brushing system, her 15-minute workout, which I use almost religiously. It's a great way to keep in shape. So if you want to participate in this contest, here's what you need to do. Now, I do have to apologize. We've had some kind of corruption in our system, and it's not quite worked out yet. So send me an email, if you want, to cclassics@juno.com. That's a backup email that I have. I don't use it often, but I'm using it for this situation because I want to be sure I get your email. And what you do is put the Donna Sebo Show in the subject line, and then put DDS30 so that I know it's for the contest that we're doing. And we're going to be making a drawing or doing a drawing before the end of the year. So I want you to know, if you want to participate, be one of those three lucky winners. This is very exciting to me because I know how valuable these gifts are. So this is a wonderful way to get fit and fabulous in 2009. Tell your friends, anyone can participate in this. So send me an email because it's going into the email pot. I'll need your contact information as well. So if you're a lucky winner, I'm going to be able to reach you. So again, use my alternate email of cclassics, S-E-E, classics, at Juno, J-U-N-O, .com so I can get it. And that'll take care of that. But I'm just so thrilled about this. Let me tell you, it's wonderful. It's just toned me up. I feel so much better, and I'm getting compliments right and left by people that I haven't seen in a long time to go, wow, you look great. You just look so fit. And you just, and they're saying it without knowing anything. And I'm just feeling just excited about the whole thing. So I'd want you to have that same kind of experience. And this is for anybody, any age. Your kids can do it with you if you want them to. Good stuff. Also, on the 13th of December, for those of you who are in the Tacoma, Washington area, I'm going to be doing a special appearance at the Dickens Festival in the stadium area. So if you are in the Pacific Northwest, in the Western Washington area, come on down. It's absolutely marvelous. And it is, I'm going to be at the King's Bookstore, and I'm going to be there from 11 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon doing many consultations. And part of the monies collected for those many consultations will be going to the new Phoebe House, which is for charitable purposes. And you just need to know that, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to be in costume as well as so many other people. It's a great event in the local Tacoma area, so I invite you to come along. Okay, give me a buzz if you want to chat today, 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756. Just give me a buzz. All I need is your first name or initial, and I'll be letting you know what's going on in your life. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Robert Friedman. He has a wonderful children's book called Milton's Secret. And because this is the holiday season, there are going to be opportunities for me to share with you some fabulous music and also information about wonderful publications for kids and other materials as well. And I just love this time of the year. But we're going to be talking also about publishing. We'll be talking about this book that he helped to publish, which is very well done, but owning a publishing business puts you into an entirely different realm. So we're going to be talking about what people who may want to be aware of if they're a writer and want to be published, what they should be alert to. So I'm looking forward to having that interview with him. Also next week, we're going to be talking about children and near-death experiences. PMH Atwater is going to be a guest. She's been on the show before. This woman is a researcher and has documented. She put together an encyclopedia regarding life after death experiences. She's got so much material and publication out on this. It's really quite interesting, but coming from the children's aspect, it's just as interesting. Neil Donald Walsh is going to be my guest next week. Conversations with God. This is their 10th year anniversary. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking to someone in France, Robert Camuto, Corkscrewed Adventures in the New French Wine World. So we're going to be discussing that and Ron Clancy. We're going to be playing some of American classics in music, Best Love Christmas Carols. Ron is just a fascinating man. I've had him on my show for the past few years. He's just great. And then Christmas Through the Decades, we'll be talking to a Mr. Bob Brewer. So we have a great lineup of guests. And remember, you can always go into my website, and my newsletter is up there. And by the way, I do want to say to those of you that perhaps got my newsletter and you got 6 copies, this is when my computer went wacko. I sincerely apologize if you got multiple copies of my newsletter. If you did not get my newsletter and you'd like to be on the list, then send me an email, let me know. But also you can go in on my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you can get that. And there's all kinds of fun stuff about eggnog, and I've got all kinds of stories. But that's what my newsletter is about. It's about empowering you, having optimistic information there, some good recipes, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I hope you will enjoy it. And if you have anything you'd like to contribute to this show or to the newsletter in the way of information, let me know. Send me an email and or just give me a buzz at my office if you want to. That's just whatever you would like to do. And my office number is 800-872-8852. Hey, we need to give you a little bit of astrological information. Absolutely. Right? Right. You need to know about your winter horoscope. And this is just something fun that I like to do about once a quarter, and it's just a lot of fun. So we're going to be talking about Libra, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. We've already covered Aries, Taurus, and Gemini. All right, all of you Libras out there, this month of December, hey, it's a good time for you to start looking at investments. Are you interested in real estate? Do you want to find out what you can do with your money that's going to give you good return? Well, real estate apparently is a good area for you to investigate. Start checking it out. Be willing to learn about it, and you are going to find things perhaps shifting as far as your investment plans will go. Going into the month of January, do you know what? You have got such a need to really connect with family. Be with the people that are most important to you. You really want to be interactive with others. And then in February, by golly, if you've been working on a project, really wanting to reach goals, seems like everything comes together in February for you. So you just want to recognize that whatever energy you're putting into whatever is on your mind, whatever is your goal at this point in time, for those of you under the sign of Libra, February seems to bring everything into a harmony. If you've not been experiencing that, just know, keep doing what you need to do for yourself and it will come together. Let's move on to Scorpio, the month of December here. Hey, it looks like money's coming your way. And even though you may decide you need to tighten your financial belt, if with good planning, which apparently your mind is going to be in that right direction to do that, by golly, you're going to find your financial picture is definitely going to be getting better. January, you are going to find that paying attention to what's going around you, pay attention to what's going on in the now. January is a focus on where you are to get things done. It's going to be very easy for you to get sidetracked, so really maintain your focus. And in February, you're going to find whatever loose ends are flip-flopping around in your life, you are going to be able to tie them down. You're going to be able to anchor them, and that's what you want to do. You want to know that this is going to be good for you and that you can move into a whole new space come spring. Sagittarius, December, do you know? Your career seems to really be important to you. You're going to find that when you go on job interviews, your self-confidence is going to be strong. You're really going to do well. And you're also going to be balancing your professional life as well as your personal life. Travel comes up during the month of December for you. Could be a short excursion, could be a long one. But whatever it is, you need to know that you can have a good time with this. You don't need to be stressed. You don't need to be anxious. You are going to have that time to unwind. January, you are just open for possibilities. You are so aware and so ready. Those of you under the sign of Sagittarius, you have this can-do attitude. And it moves you into February with a strong sense of focus. You have got this awareness that there is a new cycle coming into your life. And man alive, you are ready for it. You really, really are. So just go with it. Go with the flow. You are ready, willing, and able. Your preparation will have all been put into place. So it's just moving forward with that confidence. And those of you under the sign of Sagittarius, well, you're going to see that things are going to get done and get done well. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break in just a few seconds. But hey, if you want to give me a call, let me light up your life with a little bit of insight. 877-876-5227, that's 877-876-5227, or 888-815-9756, that's 888-815-9756. We've got so much going on here, and by the way, I want to thank, again, those of you who are sending me material. As I'm able to use it, I definitely am putting it into whatever is available time-wise for me to work with. And I so appreciate your communications. And again, I do apologize because we've had this corruption in our system that we have not been able to get things as efficiently, efficiently transmitted via electronics. but that'll pass. Yes, that's the way it goes. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We're going to be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. To Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Are any of you planning on buying an LCD or plasma television? We were out looking at some items in a major retail store not too long ago. And a lot of the information that's displayed, if you haven't bought something in a long while, which we haven't, and we're going to be replacing the television that we've had for about 10 years. We had one fairly large screen television, and we've really enjoyed it. But it's time to move on. You know, we are entering into a cycle where, with all of the changes with technology and our system, just it's time to send it to the electronic graveyard. I was amazed at how difficult it is to discern this, that, or the other. So I thought I would share with you the difference between an LCD HDTV and a plasma HDTV. And I can remember someone telling me, oh, I think it was just last year, when we were thinking about investing in a television, and we were in this store that had a gazillion of them on display, and we were really perplexed. You know, what should you get? The plasma better, the LCD, so on and so forth. Well, things change so quickly. You really have to be able to ask questions. And the salesperson said, I'd recommend you get an LCD. Don't get the plasma because you have this problem, this problem, this problem, and this problem. Well, let me just share with you what is the latest regarding these, because if you're thinking of making an investment in this, which, stop and think about it, when you are buying something, you want it to last for a while, so what is going to be the difference? Now, the common size with an LCD HDTV is 26 to 52 inches. Your plasma HDTVs, the common sizes, are 32 inches to 60 inches. So with the advantage with an LCD is that you've got more choices in sizes and you have, well, a lighter weight, and they're slimmer. They're not as deep. And they use less power. They usually have brighter screens, and there's no reflections with a screen, which is really good if you watch television during the day. And you don't have a risk of an image burn-in. Now, the cons for an LCD is that they do have a limited viewing angle, and they don't match plasmas for deepest blacks, and often there is a blurring when an image is moving really rapidly on the screen. Now, the pros for a plasma TV is that it has a virtually unlimited viewing angle, has deeper blacks and better contrast than on LCDs, and you will not have a motion blur. And you get more screen for the money in the larger sizes, and it is slim. Now, The con for a plasma is that it's not as bright as LCD sets, and shiny screens will show reflections in bright rooms, and a high contrast image might leave a temporary or permanent impression on the screen, and it uses a lot more energy to run. So that just gives you a little bit of something to be aware of so that when you're going out and you're looking at these things, you just need to know the pros and the cons. And I just thought I would share that with you because we were just recently, my husband and I, going through that same kind of conversation. Now, I also was given information that you don't need to get caught up in the numbers game when you're looking at, for a television, the difference between the brightest and darkest parts of an image. All of the information that's posted can really be hard to figure out and very, very misleading. The contrast ratios, well, apparently there are many ways to measure contrast ratios, and you can't compare them. So you don't have apples being compared with apples. You'll have all kinds of variables that you're not even made aware of. Also, apparently in advertising, there may be ratios that are given where it's based on settings that in actual use would have no relevancy for you. And sometimes picture brightness can be set too high and a black level too low. So the best way, apparently, to find a television with a great contrast is to check ratings. And you can go in, there's places like Consumer Reports and other such venues that you can go through. And they'll tell you about picture quality. And they say that contrast is one of the few critical areas in which a television must do well to earn a real high score. Let's face it, compared with things that were done in the past, the appliance, the television electronic area has just absolutely become so much better. I remember when those flat screens first came out, $10,000, $12,000. I mean, it was just unbelievable. The average person was not in any way going to be able to afford it. Prices have just dropped so rapidly. So again, a lot of us for the holiday season, we may be gifting ourselves something like a television. And again, that just gives you a little bit more information for you to work with. Kindness. Kindness, believe it or not, can be what my guest, Dr. Bandler, said, a good addiction. And that may be something that you'd like to develop. There are so many people that have become a part of different organizations because they want to be able to contribute in some way to making people's lives better. And wishuponahero.com is not unlike Random Act of Kindness, which was started many years ago, in that the people that participate in wishuponahero.com is that they like to pay it forward. They like to be able to make something happen for other people. Now, I don't have time to talk about this today, but I will try to get to it within the next week. But here are some things that you can do if you want to make a difference in someone else's life. Make someone's day. And there's just four suggestions that I'd like to give. It's one, if someone comes into your mind and you think, oh, I need to just give them a call, or I haven't heard from them, I'd like them to know how much they mean to me. Sit down and write them a note. We have gotten into so much of the electronic texting, which is fine, but there's something magical about sending someone a card and putting your own handwriting into it, unless your handwriting is just atrociously illegible, or, you know, doing something on the computer and printing it out, but communicating with someone. It really makes a difference. And handwritten notes also say something very loudly. It means that you've taken some time to communicate. Also, if you know about someone, maybe they're having some tough times, maybe there's somebody that you feel you just love to remember them, take them some cookies, do something nice for them, maybe offer to do an errand for someone. It could make a difference, but more importantly, keeping in touch, just picking up the phone, calling to say, you've been on my mind, I want you to know I care. I'm thinking of you. Love you. Bye-bye. It's so important. I don't care how great we get with our texting. When you don't have that one-on-one communication, that personal touch, it becomes very impersonal. And it's something that personal touch has magic to it. This is Donna Sebo. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul, and you do have magic. Reach out, touch someone's life, make it a habit. Make kindness an addiction, a positive addiction. It's a good thing. This is Donna Sebo. Be back here tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.